show for you today, we're going to be talking about two different topics. The role of the division chief. There's definitely not enough training or conversation about division officers and safety officers and how to avoid them from getting killed or jammed up. We're also going to be talking about a great new platform for test prep if you want to become a company officer or chief officer at the end of the show. We have an unbelievable guest. I always say that command presence isn't an art. It's something that can be learned, but it comes down to confidence, being calm, and being competent. Command presence is not only the omnipoint on the fire ground, but it's also the omnipoint in the classroom. And the one person who, without a doubt, has some of the best command presence besides our editor-in-chief, Bobby Halton, is Anthony Castros. Anthony Castros commands a stage, a room, and a fire ground like no other. He's my personal hero, and they always say, you never want to meet your heroes. Well, you can meet Bobby Halton, and you can meet Anthony Castros, and you know that this is an individual that has command presence on the fire ground, in the classroom, and in their personal lives. These are the type of mentors we should be looking for. And today we also have PJ Norwood, our guest host, who is quite often a safety officer, a division officer. The one thing that all three of us here that have in common, and I haven't talked to Chief Halston about it, but being a division officer, being a safety officer, all three of us have found ourselves in a position we probably shouldn't have been in. So let's talk a little bit about command. Before I go to PJ, I'm going to go to our editor-in-chief, and we're going to kick this around, and I think this is going to be a great show. And thanks for Fire Engineering for hosting this platform. Chief Halton, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Andoni, for joining with us. One of my favorite people who I relentlessly tease and demonstrably love. So always great to have him on. And PJ, it's always wonderful to see you and Frank. And three of my favorite guys to hang around with. And I think the topic today, you know, it was fascinating. I recently did an online seminar with some folks from Sweden and the UK and a few other places about how they were doing their command training continuously throughout the pandemic remotely. And Andoni is doing that here in the States for us with his command training program. And I think that it's really a necessary thing. I think that anything that is critical to life safety in the fire ground, you can't practice enough. I recently read a really banal piece of work by this PhD person who's just trying to make money off the fire service by claiming to know how to help us. But anyway, one of the things she said that was in her paper that she wrote was that she was training officers to know how much drill is necessary for each skill. And I was going to write her a note and say, like, endless. There's never enough drill. That's why we do it. You can always be better. You can always learn more. You can always stretch those boundaries, right? And when you work with Andoni, and I think what we're going to see today in our discussion is that, you know, we're constantly evolving, learning, and things that never happened before are happening every day. So right now, and so the position of the division chief, boy, that's a big discussion. So I don't want to take up any more time, but I'm happy to be here. And I do apologize. I've got a split at about halfway through. We've got another crisis, so I've got to jump on a Skype call that I'm sure will solve everything.
PJ,
Chief, thanks for having us in Fire Engineering again. Andoni, what can we say that hasn't already been said or we've said to you in person? I'm excited. There's a lot of these shows I sit back and, you know, I have notes and I have bullet points and I'm ready to go at it. This show, I wish I was a recliner because, man, I'm just really looking forward to kicking back. I also feel that I'll bring a little, hopefully a different perspective, as I usually try to, being in a very small combination department. Very different from where Frank worked, since he's newly retired, and where our chief, where you've worked, and Chief Alden, you know, being a small combination department, where we have, 11 career staff on duty, and we have volunteers showing up in their POV. The division commander, which I often find myself in that role, usually I try to wiggle into those roles as well, is and can be very challenging, especially with the accountability piece, because I never know who I have coming and I never know who I actually have arriving on scene. So hopefully we can chat a little bit about that, and you can help give me your perspective so I can be better at what I do.
Okay, so to set up this conversation, we have to understand a little bit about command, and I'm going to give this to you just in a nutshell, because this is a problem that I see across the country. So we have command and we have operations. If command establishes operations, that means command stops talking through operations to everybody on the fire ground. Command does everything behind operations, making sure there's a transportation corridor, coordinating with utilities, monitoring the radio, covering any of operations blind spots. But command at that point in time is not giving actual direction to the division officers. Now, some departments are moving, and New Haven is one of them, where if a mayday is called, command will run the mayday and operations will continue to run the fire. I think there's some merit in that. But the reason we have division officers is we want to decentralize the fire ground. We want to increase our span of control. As Anthony Avillo says, we want to take all the chiefs standing at the command post and break up the opinion brigade, give them a function, put them in a place where the incident commander can't see, place another set of eyes on the C side of the building or the interior division or division number two or division number three by floor. And now we're going to go to just the role of the division officer. So Anthony Castros, thank you so much for coming on our show today. It's an honor to have you. As I said, you're one of the best instructors I've ever seen teach throughout the entire United States. How you perform in a classroom is just phenomenal. So I'm going to start with a very simple question for you. What's the job of a division and group supervisor at a structure fire?
Well, before I answer that, I got to say thank you to everybody really quick, because we got to get into the meat and potatoes of this. But I want to thank Bobby for this platform, like you all said, being available to us. Thank you both, Frank and PJ, for having me. It's an honor. So the answer to that question, it's a critical role. And you mentioned operations. And here's the thing. I think one of the biggest problems in the American Fire Service is that we don't understand how to utilize the incident command system on structure fires. The incident command system was utilized and developed in the 70s in California, where I live, for large-scale incidents. And those who weren't part of that process or aren't in California oftentimes will tell me, you know, I don't understand how it works. I want to use it, but I'm not sure how it works. But I can tell you that those of us in California who are supposed to be really great at it, sometimes we even struggle with it because we apply what I call a wildland mentality to a structure fire. And that's not, it doesn't work. So a division supervisor on a structure fire, the role of a division supervisor on a structure fire is pretty simple. Your job is to keep the NIOSH 5 from coming into alignment. Okay, that's it. So what is that? Risk, number one, risk assessment. You mentioned it, Frank. An incident commander, I don't care who they are, he or she on their best day is not going to see everything going on the fire ground. They can't. They physically cannot be everywhere. And you decentralize your decision-making to your division or group supervisors. And what you do is you say, look, on my behalf as the incident commander, you're going to go and do risk assessment in your division or group. So if you're on the second floor, if you're on the Charlie side in the rear, you're doing risk assessment on behalf of me at the strategic level and on behalf of the crews working in the hazard zone at the task level. And you're bridging that tactical gap, I call it. The tactical gap is the space between the incident commander at the strategic level and the crews working at the task level. That is the essence of a division or group supervisor's job. Bridge the gap. What does that mean? Risk assessment. Number one, will we all agree that companies working in the hazard zone and the task level may not see hazards above their head or below them or around them? Is that a fair statement? Smoke conditions are evolving. Vent point ignition out the door they went in, they have no idea that's happening. Collapse potential, fire over their heads. All kinds of issues that a division supervisor will see, but also an incident commander will not see because they're too far away. So the tactical division or group supervisor can see what the task level crews are too close to see and what the incident commander is too far away to see, okay? So that's number one is risk assessment. Number two is accountability. who is actually in that division or group, not on a chart at the command post, which those are great. And there's things like Tablet Command and other platforms that are wonderful, but nothing replaces a tactical division or group supervisor who can say there's engine one and there's Joey, like in your case, PJ, where you might have volunteers coming in one and two at a time. Hey, there's Joe and there's Tim and there's Frank. And I know where they are. And I can see where they went in, and I know when they went in. I talked to them about their objectives when they went in, and I'm expecting them to come out in the next 10 minutes. And I'm watching what's happening. So accountability is number two. Number three is communication. This is all NIOSH 5 stuff. Number three is communication. They are, by virtue, I think we would all agree that communication on the fire ground, I think we all agree, is what? A very challenging issue on every fire ground. Face-to-face communication is usually better, right? Face-to-face communication. So the division of group soup is physically talking to the crews. Hey, when you go inside, I want you to search to the left. I've got engine 5 on the right. I want you, truck 1, to go to the left and do a primary report back to me. That's face-to-face. So what does that do? That increases and enhances the level and quality of communication, but reduces the amount of overall radio traffic. Because now not everyone is talking out to command on one radio, like this lifeline, this invisible lifeline on this frequency to command and flooding it and having a bottleneck. Number four is lack of incident commander ICS. In other words, the incident commander is underwater on span of control. They're behind the incident. I call it the incident power curve. An incident commander should not be playing catch up. An incident commander should be ahead of the incident, thinking ahead, forecasting. But he or she cannot do that unless they have tactical division or group supervisors handling the tactical immediate needs in front of them. If they're dealing with radio traffic and hose lines and water supply, and task level communications, they can't get ahead of the incident at the strategic level. And so, and it also keeps the span of control down. And finally, SOGs. I've been a division supervisor, I don't know how many times in my career. And I can tell you, I've had to tell crews, you know, stop doing that. Hey, do that. Wear this. Put on your mask. Put on your, you know, waist strap. You know, stop doing that. Back out of there. So you're also kind of the safety officer for that area. Because as we all know, if there's a safety officer or an accountability officer, that's nice on a tactical worksheet because you can check it off. But it doesn't make the incident that much more safe or accountable. I've been a division supervisor, I've been a safety officer, and I've been an accountability officer. And I can tell you, most impact I've had is as a division or group supervisor because I own that space. A safety officer or an accountability officer is just passing through. An accountability officer is going to say, oh yeah, there's the engine one. And the minute they leave that area, engine one could leave, go somewhere else, go upstairs, go to the back, go back to the rig, go to rehab. You don't know that. Same thing with a safety officer. I was on a commercial structure one time in Division Charlie. Big building. Command announces on the radio to all the division supervisors, hey, so-and-so is now safety. I'll tell you what, you guys, I felt so much safer all of a sudden. I was like, oh, there's a safety officer. Oh, it was like a little angel landed on my shoulder. I felt, oh my God, I'm so safe now. Well, guess how long it took for me to see the safety officer? 20 minutes. 20 minutes later, here comes Mr. Safety Officer into Division Charlie. Hey, how's it going back here? Fine, you can go home. Why don't you get me a sandwich? Why don't you do that? Because that's more useful than what you're doing right now. And so the whole point is safety officers are important and they're great. But on a structured fire, in my opinion, one safety officer isn't as effective as multiple division or group supervisors who are the safety officer for their area. Because now instead of having one safety officer, I have multiple safety officers embedded in the incident. Does that make sense? You can still have an overall safety officer if you want, and that's great. But I found that we still get bad things happening on fires with safety officers. I hope that's kind of a long answer to your question. I can see Bobby's kind of shifting his seat, so I can't wait to hear what he said.
Okay, so just to break down a couple things. So Anthony talked about divisions and groups. So a division is essentially going to be a geographic location. A group is going to move in between geographic locations. So a RIT team is generally set up as a group there's plenty of different ways to set it up, but just for the ease of understanding, a RIT team is usually set up as a group because it can move between geographic locations depending on where the need is, and a division is by a geographic location. Anthony talked about communication. One of the issues that we see with communication and accountability in departments is when we assign a division chief or division officer, we want to make sure that we give them a radio designation, the companies that are reporting to them, and what their tactical objectives are. So if you're the IC and you're going to assign a division supervisor, whether it's one or six, each one needs to know companies reporting, what their radio designation is, and what their tactical objectives are. Now, here's where some of the communications breaks down that we can work on the very next fire. If you arrive on scene as a division chief, you report to the command post, number one, you get a briefing of what's going on, you take a look at the building, and you're assigned a division. If the incident commander or operations, depending on who's designated, doesn't say over the radio what companies are reporting to you, what your radio designation is, and what your objectives are, and the objectives can depend. I mean, it's a fire, put the thing out. But if they don't say that over the radio, we need the division chief to get on the radio as soon as they're assigned and say, car 81 is assigned to basement division. I have rescue one, truck four, and engine six reporting to me. Now you can go to work. So if command doesn't do it, the division officer has to do it. TJ, your take on that, and then we'll go to Anthony and Bobby.
So Frank, I don't disagree, but in my situation, you know, in New Haven, you get a company. So you'll have three or four members or five members of that company. So you can make contact with that one lead, that company officer, whether it be lieutenant or whether it be captain, and you have your accountability piece. I don't have that luxury. I'm going to go to the second floor. If I get division two, I'm going to go to the second floor, and I'll have one member from the engine one, one member from the squad, one member from the rescue, and then I may have three or four volunteers who came in their personal vehicle, so they're not really part of a company. So while, yes, I agree with you that you could easily call out those company designations in your situation, that's always not as easy in a combination department where they may not be responding as a company. That unit or that company integrity is something we work, unfortunately, we work without because it's the situation that we're stuck in.
Can I speak to that, Frank?
Absolutely.
So to PJ's point, that's really important. Again, one of the objectives of a division or group soup, if it's working, if the division or group soup is doing their job, then radio traffic, overall radio traffic should do what on the radio?
Go down.
Should go down, right? So what I do, what I taught my company officers and what I did as a division or group soup is when I was given that division or when I gave a division to a company officer or a chief officer, they didn't get on the radio. They went and physically engaged with those crews and or individuals and said, you're working for me now. I'm Division Alpha. You're working for me. So in PJ's case, if he makes somebody a division, like Chief 2 shows up and he says, hey, Chief, can you take the back for me? I'd like to make you Division Charlie. I've got a couple of companies and a couple of volunteers back there. Can you go back and check on them? If he physically gets back there quickly and physically identifies them and gets with them and touches them and says, hey, you're working for me, that's very effective. And we did this class in a small world department in Texas, and they had a fire that night. Actually, during the week, they had a structure fire with multiple mobile homes going. And the chief arrived, and the incident commander hadn't been at the class because he was from another department. And so the chief who had been to our class went up to the incident commander and said, hey, let me go to the back for you. I'll wrangle everybody and become Division Charlie for you. And he said, thanks, that'd be great. So he went back to the rear and he had like seven or eight people just kind of milling around, and it was primarily volunteers. And he said, look, everybody, you're all working for me now. You're in my division, and I'm gonna pair you up. And here's your objective for you two or three people, and you two or three are doing this. Now you're working for me under Charlie. And that was all face to face, right? And so what that did is it reduced radio traffic, it increased safety and accountability. And the incident commander had a much lower span of control and was able to therefore get ahead of the incident and not be playing catch up and dealing with radio traffic. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So Bobby, PJ, does that resonate, PJ, with what you're talking about?
Yes, absolutely. Because we don't have that, those, you know, the the volunteers have company designations, but they're showing up in their personal vehicles at times, you know, so they're not reporting as a company. Now, I may have one volunteer show up to the command post and the operations manager say, hey, you know what? I know the Division 2 needs some more help, so go to Division 2. And they have one person show up. They're not really part of a company. So that definitely would help.
So in that case, you have to, when you get into that area, not only do you have to make contact with them, but I still believe it needs to be said over the radio, because if I go to the second floor and I'm Division 2, I may make quick contact with the engine, but the rescue and the truck are still performing a primary search. They need to know over the radio immediately that they're reporting to me. Chief Marcarelli, who's the chief of East Haven now, when we first started using Incident Command, he was actually great with it, because when a company who was searching, say, Truck 4 would go to command and bypass their division officer, and this actually needs to be done, he would very calmly say over the radio, command to Truck 4, you report to Division 2, Division 2 reports to me. And it would just kind of calm the entire fire ground, and everybody would start paying attention. So it still needs to be said over the radio. Yes. One area of caution that I've seen, and then I'll go to Bobby, is when we give, as an incident commander, that division officer their designation, make sure it's a practical designation based off your staffing. So for example, if you have a fire on the second floor and the inclination is, say you're in a department that's only going to get one division chief, don't call that individual Division 2, because we all know in the real world, where's Division 2 going to end up real soon? On the third floor. So if you designate Division 2 as the second floor, now all of a sudden you're talking to Division 2 and they're on the third floor. So if you're only going to have one division officer on the inside, give them the interior division. That way it gives them the mobility to move throughout floors inside the building, and you're still keeping accountability. Because that radio designation, if you say you're Charlie side division, you know that officer is going to be somewhere on the Charlie side. Bobby, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, as the ombudsman, I first have to correct the instructor.
Please do.
I'm just kidding. Well, and please don't misunderstand Anthony's tone. Humor regarding having a safety officer on a dynamic, large, complex event. That safety officer, if you're rolling into a command situation, and I've had it happen to me as a safety officer, I've had it happen to me as a division and as an IC, and it's large and it's spread out geographically large, or it's large because of the dynamics of it, a safety officer can create a group and can bring in additional safety officers and say, I'm going to be in charge of safety, but I'm assigning this particular officer to Division C, and he will report to the Division C, commander, and handle safety on Division C. If the event is that complex that you need a safety officer by divisions, and you may have an event. I've had events that covered multiple geographical miles. I believe it was over. It was 19 miles long. I'm not sure what the square mileage on it was, but we broke it up into two separate area commands because we were divided by a river, so we had two sides. And then we subsequently divided that up by different areas of concern. It was a urban interface fire, and so we had basically a safety officer who was running a group, and he had safety officers reporting to him within divisions. And so, depending on the size and scope and complexity of an event, take a hurricane response or any other natural disaster, flooding response or a wildfire, or you may have structures that don't fit the everyday routine. But how do you get good at the everyday routine? Is you do it at the small, run-of-the-mill. You keep the same terminology. You keep the same functionality, and you can't just decide to use an incident command system the day that the big one hits. To quote my dear friend Alan Brunicini, if you want to know how the troops are going to perform on the big one, how are they doing right now today at the smells and bells call, right? That's how you know how it's going to happen, because as we all know, any plan doesn't survive the first interaction with the event. I mean, it's a, that's why we have people in divisions to help us manage, you know, what our expectations are of a group of companies or a company, you know, on a particular event. So I think Andoni did a great job of explaining it, but please don't misunderstand our, we don't mean in any way to discount the importance of that safety.
No, let's be clear. Because when I see this from Bobby, whether it's the back of the room at FDIC or on Hump Day Hangouts, I always go, I did it again. So
and we get the humor, right? If you have a large complex event and you assign it to one person, he's not the idiot, you are.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Give him a company of people and let him do what he or she and let her do what she needs to do. Right.
Right.
So I think that's grand. And I think that it's really, really critical to understand how to manage these things. And so when Andoni was talking, I intentionally changed my screen name to Hercules Milligan and Mulligan. And that was an important deal because that was part of a command structure many, many years ago. And that was spread out and diverse over a large geographic area. And he was very critical, and he had a group of people that he had to supervise, and he was very isolated, and he was very good at what he did. And because of him, he was in part, in no small part, we won the Revolutionary War. And so, you know, if you know anything about history, you know who Hercules Mulligan was and how important he was. And so if you don't, then here's your chance to learn something about American history. So, but he was in fact a safety officer in a spy ring for Washington. So, and did a great job of it. So there you go.
You know, one of the things that I was fortunate to do in my career, I spent 4 years on a Type 1 incident management team. And when you go to these large scale incidents, you really get to see ICS. I mean, every single position in the world that they could possibly be in ICS is an ICS, right? And a safety officer on a large scale, like what we have here out here in California with 250,000 acres burning and 500 homes, and now, you know, 50 to 100 people dying, that's a very different safety officer than a structure fire. And my point was, is not to poo-poo the safety officer, obviously, but to decentralize that function, like Bobby said, to multiple people. Now what we're doing is we're saying a Division Alpha, Division Charlie, for example, Roof Division, all three of you, part of your job is safety of your area. Because if we do have a safety officer who's looking at the strategy and the overall incident, that's great. But that person can't be everywhere at once on a structure fire. That person we have to decentralize that function as part of the division supervisor. Because your question was, what's their job? A key piece is safety officer of their area, right? Along with accountability and those things.
And I apologize to the audience. I do need to leave for another meeting, but to Andoni's point, that is not to discount the responsibility that all of us have for our own personal safety on the fire ground. And also as that goes up through the food chain, as it were, for you to be watching your brothers and sisters' backs, and for the officer to be watching their crew, and for the other crew officers to be watching the other crews and their crew. I mean, safety is a shared responsibility throughout the community of firefighters that can never be, delegated or relegated to a safety officer or the SOP or anything like that. It is a much broader a sense of responsibility and accountability and duty that we have to one another as humans, first of all, but as fellow firefighters with a specific mission and up against a very specific enemy. Before I do leave, I know Andoni's going to talk a great deal about this platform he has for command level training that he's going to be doing, and I appreciate him doing that. I apologize that I can't stay, but I do want to express my absolute support of it and endorsement that participation in it will serve you for rewards throughout your entire career. And really, really useful stuff. And I've seen it and I've played with it and I support Andoni. We don't always agree on everything. We have some long, hard fought battles and we will continue to, but that's the beauty of real good discourse and disagreement. And I think that that's critically important to demonstrate and train and teach that the folks that you can disagree with, the folks you love. I mean, when Andoni told me he was coming on today, I begged him to get a decent haircut. Obviously didn't take my advice and there you go. You other gentlemen are looking very, very good. So just kidding, but please accept my apologies. I need to run. Great conversation about division officers' responsibilities as well as the role of the safety officer, which I think, you know, you could be assigned to a division as a safety officer. So, which I think, you know, if you have one of those events, like the thing that's behind us here that Andoni's showing, I would probably want a division officer and a safety officer on all three floors of that building behind him. And you can talk about that in simulation, right? Irrespective of the size of your department. PJ probably has some buildings like that in his department. He may not be able to do that on the initial assignment, but with subsequent arriving, because those are one of those y'all come fires, right? So you're going to have Bipperville and Bopperville and Kipperville and Copperville, you know, and everybody, if people see the header from that thing, they're coming, right? That's from Mike Mulligan and Mary Ann, the steam shovel story from your youth. But anyway, thank you for having me. Check out Hercules Mulligan, American Patriot.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby. Love you.
Okay, so two words of caution. First, if anybody says the word safety officer again, you're getting knocked off because we're trying to focus on a division officer here. But remember, the division officer is a safety officer, but the safety officer can't be the division officer and the safety officer. So sometimes the safety officer tries to overstep their bounds of being a division officer. Also, in a lot of departments, like the picture behind Mr. Castro's there, is even in New Haven, we'll put a safety officer on the floor with a division officer. When the division officer runs out of air, the safety officer usually takes over as the division officer because the safety officer is usually coming in later. So if you are a safety officer working with the division officer assigned to the floor, you still report to the division officer. You're just there for safety. So I'm going to give you a quick example. Pull up 2.5 wood, going good on the second floor. It's not a finished attic. They're got a crew with a ladder, high heat, smoke condition, stretching a line, stretching across the attic. I'm the safety officer. We're putting a door across a hole. We're moving around. And as soon as they get the line in there, the division boss goes, take that ladder down, and I want the ladder over here. Now, there's a lesson for a division officer here. If you assign a task, you have to give them time to complete the task. Nothing happens instantaneous. So as the safety officer, I didn't want to overstep my bounds, but it was definitely much safer for them to put out the fire than to come back down and relocate because they could get to where the division officer wanted. So I didn't change his order. I literally walked over to the division officer and said, hey, chief, give them a second. They're going to get there. I got another company here that we can put to push their line up and they'll be there in a second. He goes, okay, yeah, leave them working. So that's the role of how the division officer and safety officer can work together. If a safety officer is on that floor, they got to communicate. PJ wants to remind everybody, FE talk, hashtag FE talk, if you have a question. And I believe he has a question straight off. But before that, I want to make sure I get to one more quick thing. Anthony and Bobby talked about accountability and shared responsibility. Remember, on a fire ground, I like to say that there's only 5 places that you can be on a fire. You can either be assigned, you can be in staging, you can be in rehab, you can be at the command post, or you can be moving to one of those locations. But accountability doesn't just go to the division officer. It also goes to you as an individual. If you're assigned to that division, before you leave that division to go back to the command post, you have to check in with your division officer. Same thing. PJ can speak to this, but if he has a firefighter coming out as an individual to change their bottle, I even used to do it as a company officer before a division was assigned. Firefighter Gersha, firefighter Norwood is coming out for a bottle change. That way, command on the outside knew that my 2 personnel were coming out. If they don't appear forthwith, then they know they have an issue. So PJ, do you want to speak about that?
Yeah, so I agree with you. Unfortunately, in my department, in our world, we have to use names because company designation just doesn't always work, like I identified a little bit earlier. So that does work for us also. But I also want to get to this question from Rob Fisher. So he says, he's curious to Andoni's thoughts on passports and boards for division or group supervisors. That's from Rob Fisher, using FE Talk.
Thanks, Rob. Sorry it took a while to get to the question. But yeah, you know, it's important. It's good. When I've been a division or group soup, I would always carry with me a whiteboard. It was roughly the size of a legal pad, maybe a little bigger. On the back, it had Velcro. So if I wanted to have passports, I could. But on the front, it was just blank. And I would write down who my companies were and what they were doing. And I would carry that. I would always carry grease pencils in my turnout pocket with me, my coat pocket. And I gave a fistful to every one of my captains. And I said, if you make a division or group soup, if I assign you to a division as a company officer, then you need to have this grease pencil because you might write down on the door they went in on the wall. I had two houses burning one time, and I wrote it out on a burnt out hull of a boat in the driveway where companies were with arrows. So passports are great and everything, but what I have found is that oftentimes they're not accurate because companies don't keep them accurate. And that causes you to have to go get them if they don't have them handy. And so while they're good tools, I don't over rely upon them. They're a good augmentation. But I think having a board to write on is paramount. The question is obviously going to come up. If a company officer becomes a division or group supervisor, what do you do with your crew? So I teach that if you're a company officer and I say, hey, you're Division Alpha Engine 5, the Engine 5 officer has some choices to make. One, if his or her crew can be doing an objective, accomplishing an objective in a non-IDLH environment, like an exposure line or going and getting a water supply or laying out or something like that, then and they're safe, that's fine. Another option, give them to Engine 4. Give them to another company officer for accountability purposes. Or if you're in a larger incident, you may need your company to help you run the division. Now, this isn't a luxury everybody has because they don't have a lot of staffing, a lot of response coming. But in the larger cities, it was mentioned of having a safety officer for every division. That works well with larger cities that have a driver for each chief. If a battalion chief has a driver, then his or her driver can become the safety officer for their division that they're assigned to. So if Battalion 5 is Division 3, then Battalion 5's driver is the Division 3 safety officer. So there's a lot of ways to work around this. And it's all about what I call the ICS formula. And the ICS formula is different for everybody based on what you have. But the formula is the same. It's the building, it's the conditions, and it's the resources. So the building behind me is very different than a house, right? Versus Home Depot, versus a high rise, versus a strip mall, versus, you know, a brownstone in Brooklyn. So the building matters. Okay, you're not going to always have the same ICS template based on the building. Conditions, okay? Room and contents is very different than heavily involved, which is very different than exposures involved, which is very different than multiple victims trapped. So conditions matter. And then finally, resources. How many resources are coming? So in PJ's system versus LA City, very different resource levels, not only for the companies, but for the staffing and the chiefs, right? So building conditions and resources drive your ICS. So you may be in a situation where you have to use company officers as division or group supervisors. Well, again, what do they do with their crew? Either assign them to another officer, assign to a non-IDLH assignment, or have them help you run the division or group. Okay. I also wanted to. Do you want to talk about the bro ham real quick, Frank? And then I think we need to get to your story because that's a really great story. Because this is called How Not to Get Killed, and I think that's a really good story.
Well, I think we'll move the story. Maybe I'll give you a bridged version of it because I want to make sure we get to your new platform. So I want to hit three things because PJ has a similar story, and I think you do too. And I think division officers often find themselves alone. And one of the reasons we find ourselves alone is because in our mind, we're still part of a company. And I'll just give you the very quick beginning of this. I was assigned as a basement division supervisor at, I almost call it a shed fire. I almost got killed at the world's smallest fire. So it's literally can be in any town in America, the home I almost didn't come home in. And I've never staged companies or a company in my whole time as a firefighter. So it goes to that tactical drift. I instinctively knew something was going wrong at this fire. It just wasn't organized. I came from home, and to Anthony's role of the safety officer early, which I completely understood what he was saying, is a lot of times when I came from home as a safety officer, division officer, I would actually show up and say, hey guys, you want a sandwich or you want coffee? Because the work was pretty much done. And with knowing what the building was, what he was talking about, and the conditions, I figured I was going there to get everybody coffee and sandwiches. When I realized I had to get to work, I was like, whoa, this is, the conditions weren't that bad. And I couldn't understand why we weren't putting out the fire. And we had a ton of people standing around. So I was only assigned as the division officer one resource, the rescue, which was also strange. So what I did was I actually staged the company. They were all trying to take a line into the basement. And remember, this is 20 minutes into the job. I came from home. And as they're taking a line in, I said, stop, guys, two of you stay out here. I don't want you to come in until the first one runs out of air. As a division supervisor, one of the things that Anthony's going to talk about is you want to be able to be mobile. You want to be able to come in and out to get that tactical view. So I didn't want to commit with them immediately. I wanted to be able to evaluate the progress they were making. So I actually stood outside for a minute and I let them get to work. And I actually went around to the side of the building, took a quick look. I saw the smoke was changing. So they were making good progress. I'm talking to the two individuals pushing in lines so their line's moving. And now I'm going to go into the basement. I communicated that with the deputy chief. And as I went in, here's the lesson in this. And this is the only part of the story I'm going to tell today. I got to the company. They knew I was in charge of them. I had a radio issue. We started talking back and forth. One of their members' bottles became empty. Now, I already gave the instructions to the outside crew. They knew what my tactical objective was. They knew that as soon as somebody showed up, they would immediately come down and meet me. So that part I did great at. I get an A for that. I get an F for this part. I just assume that I'm only with one company, that I'm with the company. So now they're going out, one member's going out to change the bottle. I made sure because of the hoarding situation that I had the nozzle in my hand, but my intention was to just get the nozzle to pass it to the other firefighter. When they left as a company. I didn't realize that. We're talking about zero visibility. There wasn't a lot of heat, but zero visibility. This wasn't like a situation where I didn't think I was going home. This was like, I got the nozzle and I'm looking to go pass it to somebody and the whole entire company's gone and I'm completely by myself and now my radio's not getting out. And I will say this, for a second, I was like, oh, this is so cool. Fire popped up. I'm like, I get to be a chief on the pipe. Because another lesson of the division officer is if you're working with your hands, you're not working with your mind. And while I appreciate the grease pencil and I love the tip of writing on a wall, writing on a boat, write whatever, because you need to track the crews and it's hard to track crews. And there's nothing wrong with being a division officer out there where you lose track of the crew, even if you got the whiteboard, where you kind of stop and say, hey, who do I got on this fire floor? And PJ's saying, what are your names? In New Haven, it's, hey, and I used to do this all the time. And I think a lot of our chiefs do. You lose track. You just say, hey, what companies do I have up here? There's nothing wrong with that. It's just
That's normal.
Resetting your command. That's not a blind spot. So I'm glad that Anthony said that. So remember, as a chief officer, division officer, you are alone. You're responsible for really communicating clearly with those companies. A lot of departments want to use those tablets inside. And, you know, when it comes to even the whiteboard, I love the concept. I like the grease pencil writing on something in front of me a little bit better, but the whiteboard, I love it. But ideally, because we know that that chief officer is going to be alone, if you have extra personnel, and I don't know, every fire I go to, there's people standing in the stairs, whether when I was working in Montgomery County, Maryland, Middletown, Connecticut, or New Haven, I think it's the same guys that follow me around or girls. The fact is, there's always extra people on any fire ground. If there's not enough people on the fire ground, your incident commander is failing because they're not calling the resources that they need. But try to get the chief officer assigned with somebody else. And then if you're going to give a whiteboard or a tablet, that person can act as an aide, and that really frees up that division officer to work with their mind. And sometimes you can't, in the situation I was in, I couldn't write anything down. I mean, we were in an active zero visibility type situation. Anthony, you want to go over Broham, and then we'll go to PJ about how he ended up alone?
Yeah. So Broham, everybody, what Frank's talking about is an issue that can happen where you find yourself alone. That's not okay on the fire ground. We know that from the day one of the academy. There's no exception for division supervisors unless you're outside the building. But if you're inside the building in the hazard zone, you shouldn't be there for very long at all. And I get this question a lot. You know, a lot of people, oh, the division supervisor should not be in the hazard zone. Well, I beg to differ. They shouldn't stay in the hazard zone. They can go in and then out. And so I developed an acronym to help people understand what the characteristics and objectives of the division or group supervisor is. So it's Broham. Like, what's up, Broham? What's up, Broham? So Broham, like Frank said earlier, boundaries. What are the boundaries of your division or group? Okay. So the fire behind me, if I had division two, I had a fire in this building, just like this one. And I had division two. Okay, so there's division two, which means what? You have the whole second floor. Because I have what? Division three above you. That's a separate person. They have the third floor. So your boundaries. Boundaries could be the entire house. Maybe you've got a 1,200 square foot rambler. No big deal. And one supervisor can handle the whole thing. Everybody inside the box works for division. Alpha, interior, whatever you call. Okay. So what are the boundaries? Resources. Like Frank said, who's assigned to you? Okay, you've got engine one, engine five, truck four. Okay, cool. Objectives. What's your objectives? And like Frank said, we can assume a lot, but don't assume everything. It might be, hey, I want you to confine the fire to the back, or you're going to be fighting the fire from the Charlie side on this Home Depot that we're on. And your objective is to knock the fire down and search from the Charlie side up to halfway and then back. Don't go past that or whatever. The objectives should not be taken for granted. On this fire behind me, it was in a dark, stormy night with an explosion and a gas leak, and we had multiple units involved, multiple people trapped, and it was at 2 in the morning, and it was right after our engine closed in that first due area, which was fun. So I pull up with a truck and me, and whatever we had in our bladders at 2 in the morning was all we had as far as water goes. So we went into a search initially, but we had to be very clear on what the objectives were for the company so they didn't conflict with each other. And then, so that's bro. Ham, the ham part of bro ham. What should a division or group supervisor demonstrate, or what are the characteristics? Ham, H, hostile. They have to be hostile. They have to have a strong command presence. Like Frank said, get back there and say, hey, you're working for me. I'm basement division, or I'm you know, division sub one division or whatever. You're working for me, okay? You're not going to command anymore. Don't talk to command, talk to me. I would do that regularly when I first made into the area. And I'd start talking to crews. Hey, stop talking to command, truck five. This is battalion seven. I'm division alpha. You're working for me now.
Okay.
You know, and so now we have that established through that hostile command presence. Agile, okay? A stands for agile. Mentally thinking ahead in the next, okay? Mentally thinking about what does my boss need, the incident commander that he doesn't know, and what do my crews need they don't know. So, for example, my crews don't realize that there's fire over their head, or there's an imminent collapse, or I'm bringing a second crew in. And so I'm thinking in the next. The task level crews think in the now, right? Right now I'm stretching a hose. Right now I'm trying not to die. Right now I'm breathing air. Right now I'm forcing this door. Right now I'm throwing this ladder. Those are all task level. The next is the tactical. That's the division and group soup's job. Next, I need a second hose line. Next, I need another crew for a secondary search. Next, I need to coordinate with the roof division for vertical vent, okay? And then mobile. This is where we don't want to plant roots anywhere. You got to be inside, outside, around, inside, outside, and around. So if you're assigned to the basement division, you should go down there real quick, just for about 30 seconds to a minute, to see what you can see, talk to who you can talk to, and assess accountability, and then get your butt back out of there. Like Frank said, he took a look around to see the progress. That's what his job is go see progress. Let me do a quick lap and let you guys know how you're doing on this and see if we're making progress and tie in with the other division. I'll be right back. Okay. So once, like Frank said, once you go task and you put your hands on a tool, you're no longer division and tactical. You're just another firefighter inside the task level environment. That's not appropriate for a division of group suit. So Broham, right? Boundaries, resources, objectives, hostile, agile, mobile. Okay.
PJ, give us a condensed version of how you ended up alone.
So mine goes back to one of what Chief Walton was talking about. And I won't use that safety officer word because I don't want you to cut me out, even though we got 10 minutes left. But as a division officer, I feel it's very important to make sure that we don't lose track of ourselves. We're taking care of everybody else in that division. We have to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves, because I did exactly the opposite of that. I was taking care of the company, looking out for the conditions. I got alone. I was walking where I should have been crawling, and I fell through a hole in the floor, and I was by myself. So I think it's very important, and we won't go into the details of that. I'd rather refer everybody to the Evolving Fire Ground, where I wrote it up really good, our book published with Fire Engineering this past year. Pick up a copy of that book. You can find out more on it, because I really want to get to hear what Andoni has and his new training platform. But if you get assigned a division officer, don't forget about yourself. As a company officer, or being put in that company officer role, our job is everybody else, but it's also to take care of you and make sure that you keep track of what you're doing, making sure you're doing it right so you don't get jammed up yourself.
PJ, really well said. I want to get to Anthony and his platform, and I just want to hit one last point with radio communications. We talked about the importance of, with the division officer, it actually shrinks radio communications, which is great. But there's one thing that we need to stress, that if the face-to-face communication is going to be something that everyone else is depending on, even though it occurs face-to-face, you need to re-announce it over the radio. So for example, an engine company stretches short when your SOP says that the engine company goes opposite and above the fire and you have fire going on the floor above. If that company stretches short and they turn around to the chief outside and says, hey, we stretched short, and he says, or she says, okay, and just assigns another company. If you don't say that over the radio or tell the division officer that his second line or her second line is going to be delayed, you're putting everybody at jeopardy, because they're thinking what's next. And they're thinking that that line's going to come up, and all of a sudden that line's not coming up. So if it's a critical piece of information that the division officer needs to know, or a critical information that the division officer gets that everybody else needs to know, they need to make sure that that face-to-face gets put out in a radio communication. Now, I know we ran kind of long, but this is very important. Interview prep for prepping to be a company officer is not just for the interview. So many individuals think that, okay, this is interview prep, this is a game, I gotta master this, and then I'll go learn this. No, if you learn interview prep the right way, you are then gonna master what you have to do on the fire ground and administratively. Real quick before I go to Anthony, is I represented a lot of employees over my years as union president, and I would simply ask them, is that how you'd answer the question on an interview exam? And they would go, absolutely not. Well, that's why you're in trouble. So without further ado, one of the biggest honors that I had was a book that helped me study for my promotional exams, and I was able to score number one on my battalion chief's test, was Anthony Castro's book. So I got to actually contribute to his second edition latest book, which was a huge honor. And it was an honor to be a small part of something great. So, Anthony, mention your book, and the rest of the time is basically for you to talk and sell your platform. I don't want to weigh you down with back and forth. Go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you both for your help and contributions. I would definitely, it's a group effort, fellas. And so, yeah, the book is called Mastering the Fire Service Assessment Center. It's the second edition, came out in 18. It was a labor of love, as most are, and I was blessed to have over 20 dear friends and mentors like Frank and BJ and others who are willing to contribute their wisdom. We called it Wisdom from the Masters, and this book's 420 pages packed full of everything from simulations to interviews to counseling to oral presentations and everything in between. And what we've done is, before COVID ever happened, we decided to launch an online version of our workshop. We do a 4-day workshop that goes with this class or goes with this book. And back over a year ago, my wife and I were talking about, we really need to put this online so it's accessible to more people. And so well before COVID, production was underway. So in September of last year and January of this year, we shot video, we shot B-roll in our workshops. We spent a lot of time doing A-roll and really, really putting together what I think is an outstanding assessment center / officer development platform for you online. And so there's two tracks. There's a company officer and there's a chief officer. And both of them include a 100 simulation package. So you can get, in addition to the sims that you do in the course itself, in addition to learning about sims and tactics and strategy in the course, you get another 100 sims spanning 16 different types of incidents. So, you know, everything from taxpayers and residences to big box to vegetation fires and MCIs and everything in between. And so we're really proud of it. And the company officer is out now. You can go to trainfirefighters.com for that. And the chief officer is in final review and should be out very, very soon. And so we're proud of it. And to Frank's point, and I know PJ believes this, and I know Bobby does, it's not about taking the test or scoring well on the test. It's about the job. These are real lives that you're looking to lead in the battle, right? And so I can't tell you how many times, to Frank's point, I've heard the question, what do I need to know for the test? Because I'll learn the job later. Or what are they looking for? And I get a headache right here. And the problem is two things. One, that individual, if you're thinking that way, your mentality is probably setting you up for failure. Because the assessors are seasoned officers, and they're looking for real officers, not fakers, not candidates, not wannabes, not people who are trying to sell themselves and do a little, you know, hey, look over here, now promote me. No, it's they want actual people that can hit the job and do the job tomorrow. And you have to respect the job enough. The problem is for decades, we have all been taught, okay, here's the test way, and here's the real way. Here's what you need to get the job, and here's what you need to do the job. And that's not okay. That's not okay. So our whole philosophy has been, for many years, to teach the job and how to perform, whether it's an assessment center or real life, the skill sets are the same. And the two biggest things I think we've given officer candidates is, number one, how to check your bags at the door. We talked about checking your baggage. Everybody has baggage. We all have it. We all have baggage from past tests where we didn't get promoted or we got passed over, or the chief doesn't like us, or we don't like the chief, or there's an issue with the union, or at home, we've got issues at home with our spouse, or we've got issues with our kids, or whatever. Those things can detract and distract you from your ultimate performance. So we teach our students how to check their bags at the door. And also, we teach them how to go from candidate to captain or lieutenant or battalion chief. Because if you walk in as the officer, you will walk out with that badge as the officer. But if you walk in as a candidate, you'll walk out as a candidate, and your consolation prize will be another test 2 years later. And the biggest thing for chiefs, for those who are lieutenants or captains going for chief, many of what we see is many of those company officers who are very good company officers walk into a chief process still with the company officer mentality. You have to up your game now and think more strategically and globally as a chief officer and walk in not as a lieutenant or captain, but as a battalion chief. So again, if you want to visit us at trainfirefighters.com, the course is online. It's 24 hours long. It's self-paced. You can come and go as you need to. You can repeat it as much as you want. If you have a 6-month access, and the book is not included, but it's required. And the reason it's not included is because a lot of people have our book already, and we didn't think charging them more for something they already have was appropriate. So the book is required. We ask that you get the book. And if you have any questions, send me an email at info@trainedfirefighters.com or go to the website and learn more about the course. We're very excited and very honored to have been helped. And the company that helped us produce this is called MySafe LA, and they do a lot of the online and video production for LA City Fire Department. So it's top notch. So we're excited. So thanks, Frank.
Anthony, and another thing to mention is this program you could use even if you're not going for a promotional exam. There's not a lot of chief officer training out there. It's so broad. So you want to hone your skills a little bit, or you're the chief of a department out there and you realize, wait, OSHA says that your command level officers have to have a higher degree of training each year. But yet very often we do no training for our chief officers. First off, your chief officer should be out there in the field participating. I say, you know, you shouldn't work with tools, but training as the chief officer is somewhere where you should go use the tools for a couple minutes, make a fool out of yourself, then step back so members realize that you're human and that you're there working with them and train in your role. But this is a program that you could use as a training technique for your department as well. Would you agree, Anthony?
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you how many people have said this has made me a better officer. It prepared me for the first day. It prepared me for my job. They use the actual skills and techniques on the job for years to come, whether it's counseling or on the fire ground. And we also do, because of the demand, most people know that in 2010 and 11, the same year that you produced your tactical perspectives series, we did our Calm the Chaos Mastering Command series. That's where we met, and it was fun. That whole, you know, East meets West, sniffing each other's butts like dogs at the beach. It was hilarious. And so that has grown into a full-fledged five-day train-the-trainer course now. And so many departments want to get better at ICS, and they want to have their own members be instructors, internal cadre of instructors, which is critical. So we've been doing that all over the country, doing a five-day train-the-trainer. And it's hands-on. We actually mask up, get SCBAs. We're pulling hose lines. We're pumping smoke in the buildings. And we're doing scenarios where people get to be the division group supervisor in the drill. They learn how to do it, how to teach it. They learn how to be a more effective incident commander using the incident command system. And it's 5 days long. We've done it around the country. And departments like St. Paul, Minnesota did it with us. We flew out to them. And they used actually AFG grant money for it. So there's a lot of options to fund this type of training, and everyone loves it because it's hands-on command training. We do simulations, but we also do hands-on command training, and the instructors, who are the student instructors, if you will, walk away with almost 60 simulations, software, PowerPoints, videos, everything they need to teach it to their people in their region. So again, go to trainedfirefighters.com or email us at info@trainedfirefighters.com if you're interested. So,
PJ, we're at the witching hour, so I'm going to give you the last word of the day.
So, and Oni, thank you so much. It's always I always enjoy sitting back and listening to you because you have so much to offer. For those of you that may not be familiar with Anthony and what he does, you get a small taste, very small taste of that today. I'd also encourage you to go to fireengineering.com and look up his 2013 FDIC keynote. You want to learn a little bit more about this great guy right here. He's kind of off down here to my lower screen to the left. Check out the 2013 keynote before you spend any kind of money and you put your training in somebody. You want to know what you're getting. Don't just take my word for it. Don't just take Frank's or Chief Holland's. Do your own research. That's a great place to start. But I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. You'll never regret your decision. He's the real deal. Even though he is from the West Coast, he still is the real deal. And I do like his thought. I'm going to start carrying sandwiches around now because maybe as a safety.
Sandwiches of people.
I may have missed that part in class. So I'm going to start carrying sandwiches. They may be a little stale by the time we catch them work. But exactly. I'll still remember. So, Andy, thank you so much for
thank
everything.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. And Frank, it's all yours to close us out. Thank you for having me today as well.
Thanks, brother.
We had a great guest in Anthony tonight. I love him. He's got a great family, great history. His keynote was awesome. Check out his website. I'll make sure that PJ, the Minister of Propaganda, tweets it out, and I'll retweet it, and we'll get the information out there. We are working on an article on how not to get killed as a division officer together. So this show, I think we'll put in some of these tips today, expand upon it, and I think we'll have a pretty good article to write over this. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm going to go get back to work. And you don't even have to do any research for Anthony. I work for a think tank now. So you just gotta take my word for it. He's just that good. The think tank world just got a little shallower.
Thanks you guys for having me on your show. It was an honor. Appreciate it.
Everybody have a great day. See you at FDIC next year. And if you're going out to Indianapolis for our upcoming conference, that's great. Make sure you're safe. I will not be there, but I will be at FDIC next year. I'm sure Anthony Castro's will be there. PJ will be there as well. Thanks again to Bobby Halton and Fire Engineering. It's an honor to be on this show. Everybody have a great day.